All right, so I'm here with Carl Wright. He's an engineer at Nokia, but in his spare time, he works on something that has nothing to do with Nokia, and that's Manifold CF, which is an Apache project. Is it an incubator project, or is it a top-level project?
It's an incubator project and has been for almost 18 months now.
Okay.
It originally came from software that was written for Metacarta, which was the company that Nokia bought that I was part of. And was spun off into the open source world prior to that because Metacarta had changed its mind about how it was actually going to bundle what it did.
Okay.
It basically had an appliance originally, and the appliance had specialized search, geographic search software on it, as well as a crawler, which was designed to bring in content from various different intranet sources.
Right.
It's that crawler that they basically said, well, we're not going to need anymore because we're not going to put together an appliance. We're going to ship our software as packaged software, and it's the client's responsibility to figure out how to get stuff in there.
Right. So, and that's where Manifold CF lives, is part of the crawler, right?
It is the crawler. So it was developed for that purpose. And at the time that they were, you know, already, I think, believing that they were going to do a deal with Nokia, but I do think they had in mind a change in strategy before that, and they had decided to open source this somewhere around October or November of 2009, and then John Frank, who was the chief technology officer of Metacarta and one of the founders, basically approached Grant Ingersoll, who was at that point starting up or helping to start up Lucid Imagination.
Right. We've had Grant on the podcast before, so
yes, and Grant speaks extremely well, unlike me. So. But anyway, so he was basically, oh yeah, this sounds like a great idea, and yeah, I imagine this would be very useful. And so it wound up, we wound up going in and asking if we could enter the incubator, and had a vote, and it was, a pretty sizable number of people were interested in doing that.
Okay.
So we actually went and entered the incubator and got the code grant and everything all set, which took a while because, you know, we were being very cautious about all the legal implications and everything else. And that was done somewhere the last week of December of 2009. And somewhere around the first week or the second week of January, the Nokia purchase was announced.
So you literally got into the incubator program just in time to get acquired.
Yes, and that was really entertaining. And so that's why Nokia and Manifold CF had nothing to do with one another.
Okay.
Basically, Manifold CF, Nokia inherited all arrangements that I had, or all contracts that I had with Apache.
Right.
And by virtue of the deal that they made, they basically maintained those.
All right. Well, we're here to talk about Manifold CF, and I'm really interested. So what kind of sources can it pull from?
At the moment, it's basically a framework and a number of connectors.
Okay.
Okay, the connectors are of three different kinds. One of them is for getting stuff out of a repository. Another one is for injecting stuff into a target, which is usually a search engine. And then there's this third kind, which is basically how to get hold of authorization information for a given user for a given kind of repository.
Okay, so you're talking like open or OAuth or OpenID or...
Not really.
No?
This is authorization information, and every kind of repository tends to have its own model. There are some that basically are built from ground up to use the Active Directory model. So what they have is, you know, SIDs, typically. They understand SIDs very well. But such systems only really run on Windows.
Right.
There's one particular one that everybody's heard of, which is called SharePoint, which its security model is Active Directory.
Right.
But most repositories don't do that. They had their own internal way of doing things, and they may have a mapping to Active Directory. They may have some module which sort of synchronizes these things, but they really have their own internal idea of what security is.
Okay.
And LiveLink, Documentum, they're both like that. Another one which you would have thought, because it runs, you know, only on Windows, which is Meridia, which is an autonomy mm-hmm. unit these days, also has a similar setup.
Okay.
So you asked the question of what sorts of repositories do we support?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's connectors for the repository side that will take you to LiveLink, Documentum, Meridio, SharePoint, FileNet,
mm-hmm.
And a bunch of, you know, more open kinds of things like wikis,
mm-hmm.
RSS feeds, sitemaps, the general web, which mm-hmm. permits you to crawl that, of course, because that's sort of like the touchstone.
Yeah, that might be useful.
And probably others that have fallen off out of my mind at mm-hmm. the moment. And for authorities, on the other hand, we have an Active Directory authority,
uh-huh.
a LiveLink authority, a Documentum authority, a Meridio authority, and we don't need any others because Active Directory is used for the rest
okay.
that actually have security. And as far as output connectors are concerned, there is one for Metacartus GTS, which uh-huh. was the original
right.
system was built for.
That makes sense.
There is also one for Solr, which is the one mm-hmm. that tends to be used in open source these days.
Right, because you're sticking it into a search engine.
You're makes sticking sense. It into a search engine, and there's one for Open Search Server, which I actually don't know that much about that, but I know that it is basically an open
mm-hmm.
platform, but it is software for purchase.
Right.
And a guy who works there, the CTO, in fact, or he's the CEO, actually contributed that connector, and we just bundle it with our stuff.
That makes sense.
Because, frankly, we're
somebody's using it.
We're connector whores.
Right.
We'll take whatever we can get. So, the overall picture is that we're growing all the time into multiple new connector areas.
Uh-huh.
And this is one of the things that distinguishes us from any of the other offerings that are really there, is that it's pretty easy to put together a connector. It's not like the Google appliance where you sit down and you effectively write your own crawler and then you plug it under a very generic interface that doesn't
right.
really give you any help. In this particular case, the framework really does do 99% uh-huh. of the work. And you do the remaining 1% that just basically describes how to get to those particular repositories that you're trying to get to.
That makes sense. So I guess my next question is, we've got these connectors that are kind of like the plugs that you can plug in and out of, you know, different things and hook things into manifold CF. But what happens in that box? You know, when you get information
yes.
coming in, you know, to get it into whatever you need to put it back out to Solr or to...
Yeah, what does Manifold CF keep as far as its own information is concerned, or...
Well, that would be interesting,
happens?
Too, but, yeah, what happens in that black box to get the information from the repository into whatever system that
right.
you're trying to feed it to?
Well, first of all, it's... the core crawler is built on top of, in fact, the whole thing is built on top of a relational database.
Okay.
There are certain design points. Remember, this once ran on an appliance.
Uh-huh.
It was meant to be set up on the appliance. It was meant to just sit there and run day in, day out, week in, week out,
mm-hmm.
year in, year out with
right.
absolutely zero maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was that, you know, you obviously can't expect somebody who's buying an appliance to go in and say, well, you know, it ran out of memory. We're going to have to fix that. Yeah, no, they can't do little things like that. And so basically...
I avoid warranties. You don't
yes.
expect your customers to.
Yeah, they turn it off and they turn it back on and they expect it to keep working, those
uh-huh.
kind of little details. So this is all baked in to Manifold's design from the start, and that's why there's a relational database under there, because many of the other alternatives basically did not have that kind of resilience. So you could
mm-hmm.
hit it with a hammer and it would get up and keep going.
Which one are you using? Postgres?
Postgres. We actually do support, to some extent, Derby and HSQLDB in their embedded forms at
mm-hmm.
the moment. There is, of course, I'm sure that I don't have to tell you this, but it's very difficult to say this database and this database and this database are all equivalent except for a little API that you put on top. You know, you're never going to get the plans to agree quite the same. Everybody's got their own constraints about what index gets used when.
Uh-huh.
It's a challenge to make that actually happen right.
Right. Well, even the ones that people kind of hold up and say these are the same, like Postgres and MySQL, I mean, there are fundamental differences between them. Makes sense.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
So, effectively, that's just a little digression, but you asked what actually happens in the black box, so I have to start there. The second thing that happens in the black box is basically there's a number of things that we keep around. One of them is a list of the connection definition information. In other words, for every connector there are a number of potential connections you could have, in the sense that the connector describe is a bunch of code that describes, say, how to connect a documentum.
Uh-huh.
A connection describes which documentum server you're going to connect
right.
to, and all the other various details having to do with that. And that's up to you to define. There's a UI for you to help you along to do that.
Okay.
It's up for you to define how to actually talk to a given server. And we'll go off and we'll check to be sure you really can talk to that server if you've got uh-huh. it all right. So we keep that information in the database. We also keep the information for all of the different connectors, all of the different kinds of connections, rather. The authority connections and the output connections, those are all in the database as well.
Okay.
The other thing that we keep around is a definition for a job.
Okay.
And a job basically is not a job as far as a task, which you might... Mm-hmm. be the way you would think about it, but a job in a crawler that is meant to run again and again and again and
right.
again is a description of a set of documents more than
uh-huh.
anything else. It also has scheduling information like when I'm going to go do all this, but pretty much it consists of the description of the documents you want. Pretty much anything that affects how you're going to actually take stuff into that index, you know, the metadata that you want,
uh-huh.
the documents that you want, that
uh-huh.
kind of thing.
Right.
And that is what the job is, nothing more than that. So that all that information is kept. And then finally, there's the most important structure, which is the job queue.
Uh-huh.
So any kind of crawler basically has a queue where you discover documents.
Mm-hmm.
You put them on the queue, and then the documents are read off of the queue one at a time and passed off to the various threads that are out there doing their thing.
Right.
And the documents are processed. Maybe new documents are discovered during that process, and they get put on the queue, too. But after they're processed, the document is marked as done, and things continue. And that's
right.
a pretty standard flow for that.
Now, is process being handled by the connectors to wherever you're throwing the data off to, or is this something else?
Well, process is actually to go to the connector, pick up the documents from there, and if the document is of the kind that the output connection actually says it wants, well, then we pass it to the output connection.
Mm-hmm.
We keep track of the information as the queue doesn't go empty. We keep track of the information also of what we've actually
right.
Indexed into the target because, you know, we also, mm-hmm. since it really is a list of documents, if you change that list or you basically wind up with documents that no longer should be there, we remove them from
mm-hmm.
the index.
Okay.
So you have what you've really done is you've set up a description of documents that you want in your index, and the documents that aren't supposed to get into your index will take out.
Okay.
So.
So, what are you using for your queue? Is it database backed or is it something else?
Same thing. Everything is built upon the relational database.
Okay.
So that is the thing that effectively limits the performance to some
right.
degree at this time
mm-hmm.
because even though databases are pretty good and if you use the indexes properly, you know, you actually can do extremely well for the kinds of things we're using. It limits also the breadth of databases we can use
mm-hmm.
because one of the key operations that we need is to be able to read in order. Let me see if I can put this another way. We keep documents in priority order, or we basically assign a priority to every document that's
right.
in that job queue. And what we want to do is we want to pull documents out a few hundred at a time.
Uh-huh.
In that priority order.
Okay.
With other criteria applied also. So we really need to be able to read from the index.
Uh-huh.
And various databases are either really good at that or really bad at that.
Right.
And the ones that are really bad at that are very difficult to use in this environment. Because if you imagine a queue that has 10 million items in it.
Right.
If you expect that to be sucked into memory, sorted, and then you pull the first two, 100 off, and you think right. that's going to perform, it's not.
Right.
But if you're actually just reading out of the index, you can get it to perform quite well.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's kind of an interesting problem, too, because, yeah, how do you maintain a B-tree that size to manage that kind of an index?
Well, I mean, the B-tree is what databases are, really.
Right.
It's a database. A database is really how to manage B trees. That's really yeah. all that it is. So you basically have the whole idea of pulling things out of the database very efficiently,
uh-huh.
making sure that when we, for example, change the state of something in that. In that queue from one thing to another, we can get at it very quickly. So mm-hmm. there's a number of B trees that we need to do this. We make sure that it's the minimal set
right.
so that we have to do as little work as possible
that
to
makes
maintain
sense.
It all. But nevertheless, there's a certain amount of overhead that's involved mm-hmm. in this.
Right. So did you write your own queue, or are you using something else that uses... Postgres.
This is our own thing because
okay.
it has to be just so.
Okay.
As you kind of can imagine. So basically, we designed our own tables and put the table schemas, indexes, and everything else in abstractions in the code.
Right.
So
really interesting. So it sounds like you've had to solve several different problems. I'm wondering how do you manage the connectors? I mean, do you have an API for each one that people can just write to, or
yes, there, you implement a Java interface. The interface, the kinds of things you do, for example, in a repository connector, are very straightforward.
Uh-huh.
You have essentially three major operations. One of them is get the initial set of documents.
Right.
Second one is given some small number of documents, and you can tell it how many that should be, whether it's mm-hmm. 1 or 100 or 10
right.
or whatever. Given some small number of documents, go off and find version strings for those documents.
Okay.
And then the final operation is to process the documents, which processing involves several things. One of them is actually going off and fetching the document and maybe sending it to the index.
Uh-huh.
Another one is extracting additional document references from it.
Right.
So, for example, when we crawl a file system, even directories are documents, but they
right.
don't get indexed.
Right.
And the connector makes the decision mm-hmm. as to how that's going to happen.
Right. So are the jobs defined in the connectors then?
The jobs are not defined in the connectors. The connectors implements those three methods.
Okay.
Very simple, right?
So when you create a job, are you effectively storing code in the database, or...?
Remember, a job is just a set of documents, a description of a set of documents.
Okay.
So what we wind up storing in the database for a job is an XML document.
Okay.
And the XML document's interpretation is entirely up to the connector code.
Okay.
So the connector goes and it looks at this and says, well, we parse the document for you. But
right.
it looks at the information that's in that job document specification,
uh-huh.
is what we call it. We look at the information that's in the document specification inside the connector and we say, yeah, that means I should be filtering out everything that begins with X.
Uh-huh.
And or whatever it's going to do. And it really is completely connector dependent is what
right.
that means. The same thing with the configuration information.
Mm-hmm.
Completely connector dependent as to what it actually means.
Okay.
The framework knows nothing about what's in those things.
Okay.
Other than their XML.
Mm-hmm. So you tell a job to run over a specific connector at a specific time, and then it goes and it does
yes.
whatever it does.
You give to a job the name of a connection...
Mm-hmm.
for getting the documents, the name of an output connection for where they go,
mm-hmm.
the times that it runs, and you give it that specification information,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, when you set it up in the UI, the bit of the UI is also supplied by the connector.
Okay.
So I lied when I said there was only three methods. There's also methods for actually supporting the UI.
Okay.
And those methods are involved in how do I build this document specification?
Right.
How do I build this connector, this configuration information in HTML so that it actually appears nicely in the tab UI?
Right.
That's all that it does, though.
Okay.
Nothing more than that.
So I'm a little bit curious, what if I want to put things into Solr, but I also want to put it into, I don't know, some other data store? Can you specify multiple outputs?
You can't specify multiple outputs for any given job. You can specify multiple jobs. Each one has a different output. And part of the reason for that is we actually do keep track of what successfully managed to get into that index.
Right.
And if it didn't successfully manage to get into one, but did successfully manage to get into the other, we don't have a good model for dealing that on a per dealing with that on a per job basis.
Right. So you deal with it on a per document basis.
Yes.
That makes sense. So, so you've kind of aimed at Lucene. You've got OpenSearch. Are there any other engines or repositories, I guess, on the back end that you're looking at?
Yeah, there was one other that was mentioned. That in fact, there's a ticket open, and it escapes my mind what it actually, the name of it again, because everything has open and free and God knows what in it now. it was something it was a particular back end search engine that I had heard of before. Somebody is actually doing a connector for it.
Okay.
Hopefully that will be contributed and become part of our next release. So we're getting another back-end connector. I wish I could remember the name of the damn thing.
So do you think this is going to get to the point where maybe you have a separate repository or management system for connectors? You get to the point where you have so many of them that you just can't include them all?
It could get that like that. I mean, but basically what you do is you have the ability... The connectors don't actually appear unless you register them in the database. The database also has a list of the connectors that are registered, the classes that implement them.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, if you say, well, you know, I don't really care. I don't want the wiki connector to appear in the damn dropdown. You can simply not register it, and it won't.
Okay.
So I don't think it's going to get too complicated for people to deal with.
Right, and that's all managed in the UI?
It's all managed in the UI. There's also a RESTful API, which basically lets you do everything you can do in the UI as well.
Oh, interesting.
And that's a relatively recent addition.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are three web services that go with this. The process picture looks like the main crawling process, which is meant to run as a daemon of some kind or another.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's three web applications.
Right.
The first one is the crawler UI, which we've alluded to already. And then there's the authority service, which is the service which basically... given a username, will cough up the user's ACL information so that we can basically enforce security on the search results. And the third one is this RESTful API service, which we not only built the API recently, but we also built a scripting language which is meant to deal with that API. So you can very easily write little scripts that will go off and, you know, set stuff up in the way you want it to set up.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So are you the only person working on this at the moment?
No. We have actually three other active committers at this time. The initial bunch of folks who came, you know, who are all enthusiastic from Lucid Imagination, I don't think we got a single commit from any one of them. Which was really kind of a letdown. But, you know, they basically did go to the extent of setting everything up for the project, which I thought was very nice of them to do.
Yeah.
But then they got really involved in building Lucid Imagination.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
So they didn't really have the time and the energy to go and get into what it was basically a considerable amount of software. And so that's basically where that stands. We're actively looking for new committers at all times. And for me, a definition of somebody who's a good candidate committer is somebody who's willing to stay involved for a while and who's somebody who knows intimately at least one connector and hopefully a bit of the framework.
Right.
There's, you know, when you have a number of connectors and every single one of them has embedded in it a lot of domain knowledge, you're never going to find one person.
Right.
Who can possibly understand all of them.
Right.
And that's, and not only that, even testing all of them, especially when proprietary code is involved, requires somebody with access to those proprietary systems.
Right. That makes sense.
So it does, Manifold CF has an interesting sort of, it's not just a technological challenge, it's sort of an organizational challenge, and I think it makes it a little different from most Apache projects.
Right.
So
you also wrote a book about Manifold CF.
Yes.
And it's in the, what is it, the Manning Early Access?
It's in Manning's Early Access Program.
So how do people get that if they're interested in this?
Well, you go, just go to www.manning.com/WRIGHT, and you'll find that book. And you can buy it early in its early access form. There, we've already made the decision not to basically release it in paperback form until Manifold CF grows further.
Right.
So that early access form is likely to be updated over time as Manifold continues to go and grow over time.
Right.
As I alluded to earlier, we're trying to basically expand the footprint of Manifold in the sense that more connectors, absolutely, but we're also trying to get some interest in some ways from folks who have, you know, really big crawling projects
right.
to some extent. And one of the ways that we're hoping to do that is going to involve some fundamental and very interesting changes. One of being able to crawl on top of a NoSQL data store is one of the things that we're thinking of doing.
Crawl on top of a NoSQL data store, meaning that you manage all of this stuff in a NoSQL?
In a NoSQL world.
Instead of
a relational database. Well, it's not going to be instead of. I'm going to try to make sure that when this is set up, it's your choice.
You pick your poison. So what are the trade-offs then? I mean, NoSQL does some things well, but other things not necessarily as well. And if you're dependent on the relational model, are you going to have problems switching over?
Well, this is actually what I was thinking of doing in a lightning talk last night.
Okay.
Which was, how do you build, first of all, who would want to, and then how would you build essentially what amounts to a SQL database on top of a NoSQL database?
Oh, man. Okay.
Okay, but I've been told now by a couple of people that either I'm insane or I'm going to fail or maybe a combination of both. However, I've looked at the problem pretty carefully, and basically the story is that a lot of what NoSQL gets you is not simply due to the fact that it's a completely disconnected key value store, but it gets you something because transactions don't have locking. There
right.
isn't really any kind of notion of a transaction, but if you can basically find your way through the process of making changes to your persistent storage without locking at all, you basically, or most of the time without doing anything other than flying your way straight through, you've taken advantage of 99% of what NoSQL actually offers you.
Right.
And so my thought here is that instead of having transactions, which basically go and throw locks all over the place, what we do instead is we run our way through the whole thing, and at the very end we check to see whether or not consistency has been maintained, and so the transaction is safe to really commit,
right.
in a sense. And if it turns out that it's not safe, we say, hey, wait a minute, back up, start over, and we've not done anything yet to the
right.
actual persistent store. And so what this means is that instead of a situation where 99% of the time you say, instead of you saying begin transaction, do stuff, end transaction, and not having to worry about that, what you'll have is a loop instead. You'll have a, you know, while true, begin transaction, do stuff, end transaction, and a catch for an exception. And the exception is, I couldn't finish this transaction, in which case you have to try the loop again.
Right. My stuff got clobbered.
You're going to have to try again.
Right.
And I've managed to convince myself that I can run on a NoSQL store like Voldemort at something like 1/4 the speed that you would get with straight key value access, but also have transactional integrity of that kind.
Right.
And the trick, once I've got that transactional integrity, I can actually build B-trees within Voldemort.
Right.
And then I have the ability to build a job queue there.
Right. So effectively what you're doing is you're picking up a system that doesn't have the brakes in it, and you're putting your own in.
I'm putting in brakes of sorts, but I'm using the system as it stands to get me into massive scaling.
Right.
Horizontal. As well
right.
as
that makes sense.
As well as performance wise.
So does Voldemort then not offer you a consistency model?
Voldemort, the reason it's called Voldemort is it's intrinsically evil. And so since it's intrinsically evil in that basically it is the coder's responsibility
uh-huh.
to reconcile differences that may appear even among multiple nodes.
Oh, wow.
So basically you say, hey, get me this the value for this key, and if some two machines were out of whack or out of sync, you're going to get back multiple values for that.
Okay.
And you have to figure out what the hell to do then.
So basically they've taken all the safety equipment off and said, if you want it, build it.
Exactly. And they figure that you will do a better job building things that are ad hoc, one at a time, with individual case analysis than you could mm-hmm. in a generalized system. I don't entirely buy that.
Right. It really depends on the system.
It really depends on the system, and I think that one of Voldemort's problems is it essentially is pushing an almost untestable scenario
mm-hmm.
onto the designer of software. I mean, how many different paths can you test? And this multiplies the number of paths you
right.
test by an enormous number. And so effectively, a lot of the stuff that's built on Voldemort, I don't care if it's fast as whatever, I would claim that it's not testable.
Right.
And so by making a regular system on top of this,
mm-hmm.
I think you get a lot of the advantages of Voldemort. You'll give some things up.
Right.
But you'll get a lot of the advantages of Voldemort, and you'll also get testability.
Right.
So that's the goal.
So I'm a little curious then why you didn't go with something else that does have a consistency model like Cassandra.
Cassandra has a consistency model, but it's a very limited one.
Right.
We don't do joins in Cassandra.
That's true.
Well, I still want to do joins.
Okay. And you can do joins in Voldemort?
I can, if I have a general key value consistency model,
mm-hmm.
I can build B-trees of all different kinds. I can do joins. I can basically represent pretty much all of the SQL constructs you would write in SQL on
mm-hmm.
top of that. What I intended to do was basically set it up so that I'm not doing the SQL job of inventing the plan for you.
Right.
I am making you tell us what the plan is.
Okay.
But I intend to basically make it have all the same moving parts that SQL does.
Okay.
Including joins and subqueries and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, whether you succeed or not, it's going to be really interesting to see what you learn. So.
Yes. Well, I'll either fail horribly or it will actually be really cool.
Yeah.
And if it turns out to really if it turns out to fail horribly, the reason it will fail is because we wind up retrying way too many transactions.
Right.
That also is controllable,
mm-hmm.
though, because that's a function of the number of key values you're changing in every transaction.
Right.
The smaller the number you're changing, the less likely you are to fail.
That's true.
So you can tune this.
Uh-huh.
And so I think there's a really good chance that it's going to work well. So otherwise I wouldn't be investing time and effort.
Right.
So.
All right. So what's in the future for Manifold CF?
Well, we have the project or the software, and they're really not mm-hmm. exactly the same thing. For the project, we're trying to get more committers. We're trying to get a level of interest and at least awareness that the project exists.
Right.
Because one of the things I've noticed is that almost nobody's knows it's there.
Right.
And I'm not sure quite why that is. It took us 6 months or 9 months to get a link from the Solar Leucine site to Manifold CF. I'm not sure why that is. It just makes no sense whatsoever. But at any rate, that's one thing that we're trying to do. Another thing that we've been that we're trying to do software-wise is, like I said, increase the footprint of the thing.
Right.
You know, make it. We built a wiki connector recently,
mm-hmm.
and the reason for that is because I'd run into two or three people who tried to crawl wikis with a web crawler and fell over and died, basically.
Right.
And it turns out that the wikis have APIs, and you can use those APIs to make a really efficient crawler.
Mm-hmm.
We built one, and as far as I know, it's one of the only ones that's out there.
Right.
So that kind of general breadth, we're doing Alfresco connector to... Mm-hmm. Generally getting into areas, having the breadth that nobody else has.
Right.
Is one way that we're going to grow. And the other way we're going to grow is this whole idea of making ourselves horizontally scalable at fairly massive amounts, fairly massive degrees, so we can run in multiple nodes, even though nobody's ever going to really want to do that, I don't think.
Right.
It's technically possible. Nobody's going to feel like they're boxed in.
Right.
So... those are the main areas that we're looking at for the moment for the future.
Okay.
We may do MySQL support too, which seems like a pretty much no-brainer at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So the Postgres and MySQL both are first-class citizens.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that all just depends on which features you're using for Postgres that translate. So.
Yes.
That makes sense. If people want to get involved in the project, what's the best way to do it?
We have mailing lists. As every Apache project does. Connectors user at incubator.apache.org and connectors dev at incubator.apache.org.
Okay.
If you have a question, you can just go there. There's a fairly complete site, which if you just Google Manifold CF, you will find lots of links to. That's one way, but trying the software is the easiest way to do it, obviously.
Right.
I know one particular guy who does solar training who uses Manifold CF in a solar training because it's so easy to set up and run.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you download it, you start it, it runs. Nothing more than that is necessary, and so for a training class, it really is very nice.
Right. Feeds solar very nicely.
Yes.
So what does CF stand for?
Connector Framework. The original name of the project was Connector Framework within Metacarta. When it went open source, it was given the moniker Lucene Connector Framework, which we would have loved to have kept, because the Lucene name, of course, has some cachet to it.
Right.
But it was shortly after we joined the incubator, the board made the decision that there were just too many sub-projects and they didn't like sub-projects anymore.
Right.
And so Lucene basically said, no, okay, out you go, and you're going to be your own eventual top-level project, but you need a new name.
Right.
That new naming process took almost 6 months.
Oh, really?
We went through so many iterations and came up with a lot of possibilities. Some of them were pretty good, but had copyright or trademark issues. Others had, people who liked them and people who hated them.
Right.
And in the end, we wound up keeping a little bit of the connectors framework bit simply because Manifold is a trademarked name of a GIS system.
Oh, really?
So even if Apache Manifold is not the same as Manifold, but it's close enough, that we had a little bit of a concern there, so we kept the CF for Connectors Framework.
Oh, okay.
Which is a name that everybody could accept, but nobody really liked. Oh, well.
Yeah. So I guess my last question is, so people can join the mailing list, they can start using the project to connect to Lucene or whatever it is that they want to pull the data into. How do people find you or follow what you're up to?
I do have a blog. I have a blog that was actually set up specifically for the book. And so it's not updated that much. I mean, you can see what I'm doing in the mailing lists. That's the easiest thing. But if you want to go to my blog, it's manifoldcfinaction.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And basically, there's also a Manning forum where you can ask questions about things having to do with the book, per se. And usually, many times, people ask questions that are best asked in the forums anyway.
Right.
In the mailing lists. I don't think there's any downside whatsoever to creating tickets, signing up for the mailing lists, seeing what's actually going on, asking questions in the mailing list.
Right. Makes sense.
It's how we know what's going on in the community. That's also how we can best respond. Those lists are archived. They're searchable. Apache keeps them indexed so that you can actually go to a page and and search on what you're looking for, and you'll find them. It's a very useful resource, and that's really the best way to do things.
Okay.
So I don't know whether or not anybody would follow what I am actually doing, because most of the time I'm working in Nokia.
Right.
And something totally different. So.
Yeah, anyway. Well... I really appreciate you taking the time to talk, and you know, we'll get this up within the next few weeks and let people know that Manifold is out there and available for them to use. I think there are some people out there that that are definitely going to have a use for this to pull the information. I know several people are using Lucene in my audience, and you know, so this is just another tool that you can put in your tool belt and make it work.
Yes, and you know, if I had to say what the distinguishing characteristics are, that's always an important thing. One of them is its breadth, and the other is its security.
Right.
It is difficult, and even LucidWorks doesn't yet do this. It is difficult to actually project repository security into search results, and that's something where we basically had to start with all this, because Metacarta dealt with a lot of very security conscious people.
Right.
And so, you know, we developed this model over 5 years, and that's one of the reasons why you'd want to use us.
All right.
Manifold. So.
All right. Well, thanks again, and I'll let you know when it's up.
All right. Well, thank you.